It was late afternoon when the London sun broke through and the city began to dry. Bezu Fache felt weary as he emerged from the interrogation room and hailed a cab. Sir Lee Teabing had vociferously proclaimed his innocence, and yet from his incoherent rantings about the Holy Grail, secret documents, and mysterious brotherhoods, Fache suspected the wily historian was setting the stage for his lawyers to plead an insanity defense.
Sure, Fache thought. Insane.
Teabing had displayed ingenious precision in formulating a plan that protected his innocence at every turn. His listening post was in the one place a man with polio could not reach. He exploited both the Vatican and Opus Dei, two groups that turned out to be completely innocent. His dirty work had been carried out unknowingly by a fanatical monk and a desperate bishop, and the lone man privy to Teabing's true identity was conveniently dead of an allergic reaction. The information coming from Calais out of Chateau Villette suggested that Teabing's cunning ran so deep that Fache himself might even learn from it. To successfully hide bugs in some of Paris's most powerful offices, the British historian had turned to the Greeks. Trojan horses. Some of Teabing's intended targets received lavish gifts of artwork, others unwittingly bid at auctions in which Teabing had placed specific lots. In Saunière's case, the curator had received a dinner invitation to Chateau Villette to discuss the possibility of Teabing funding a new Da Vinci wing at the Louvre. Saunière's invitation had contained an innocuous postscript expressing fascination with a robotic knight that Saunière was rumored to have built. Bring him to dinner, Teabing had suggested. Saunière apparently had done just that and left the knight unattended long enough for Remy Legludec to make one inconspicuous addition. Now, sitting in the back of the cab, Fache closed his eyes.
One more thing to attend to before I return to Paris.
The Parkside Hospital recovery room was sunny. You've impressed us all, the nurse said, smiling down at him. Bishop Aringarosa gave a weak smile.
I have always been blessed.
The nurse finished puttering, leaving the bishop alone. The sunlight felt welcome and warm on his face. Last night had been the darkest night of his life. Despondently, he thought of Silas, whose body had been found in the park.
Please forgive me, my son.
Aringarosa had longed for Silas to be part of his glorious plan. Last night, however, Aringarosa had received a call from Bezu Fache, questioning the bishop about his apparent connection to a nun who had been murdered in Saint-Sulpice. Aringarosa realized the evening had taken a horrifying turn. News of the four additional murders transformed his horror to anguish. Unable to reach the teacher, the bishop knew he had been cut loose. Used. The only way to stop the horrific chain of events he had helped put in motion was to confess everything to Fache, and from that moment on, Aringarosa and Fache had been racing to catch up with Silas before the teacher persuaded him to kill again. Feeling bone-weary, Aringarosa closed his eyes and listened to the television coverage of the arrest of a prominent British knight, Sir Lee Teabing.
The teacher laid bare for all to see.
Lee Teabing had protected his identity shrewdly, feigning a French accent and a pious heart, and demanding as payment the one thing he did not need, money. Aringarosa had been far too eager to be suspicious. The price tag of 20 million euro was paltry when compared with the prize of obtaining the Grail and with the Vatican's separation payment to Opus Dei. The finances had worked nicely. Teabing's ultimate insult, of course, had been to demand payment in Vatican bonds, such that if anything went wrong, the investigation would lead to Rome.
I'm glad to see you're well, Bishop.
A heavy silence fell between them. Fache ran his hand back over his forehead as he gazed down at Aringarosa.
Bishop, I must return to Paris, but before I go, I would like to ask, where do you go from here?
Aringarosa had been asked the exact same question as he left Castel Gandolfo the night before.
I suspect my path is as uncertain as yours. Yes,
Fache paused.
I suspect I will be retiring early.
Aringarosa smiled.
A little faith can do wonders, Captain. A little faith.
Rosslyn Chapel, often called the Cathedral of Codes, stands 20 miles north of Glastonbury, Scotland. Built by the Knights Templar in 1446, the chapel is engraved with a mind-boggling array of symbols from the Jewish, Christian, Egyptian, Masonic, and pagan traditions. The chapel's geographic coordinates fall precisely on the north-south meridian that run through Glastonbury. The longitudinal rose line is the traditional marker of King Arthur's Isle of Avalon and is considered the central pillar of Britain's sacred geometry. It is from this hallowed rose line that Roslin, originally spelled R-O-S-L-I-N, takes its name. Roslin's rugged spires were casting long evening shadows as Robert Langdon and Sophie Neveu pulled their rental car into the grassy parking area at the foot of the bluff on which the building rose. Their short flight from London to Edinburgh had been restful. Gazing up at the stark edifice framed against a cloud-swept sky, Langdon felt like Alice falling headlong through the looking glass. And yet he knew the text on Saunier's final parchment could not have been more specific. The Holy Grail neath ancient Roslin waits. Langdon had fantasized that Saunier's Grail map would be a diagram, and yet the Priory's final secret had been unveiled in the same way Saunier had spoken to them from the beginning. Simple verse. Four explicit lines that pointed without a doubt to this very spot. Despite the clarity of Saunier's final revelation, Langdon had been left feeling more off balance than enlightened. To him, Roslin Chapel seemed far too obvious a location. For centuries, this stone chapel had echoed with whispers of the Holy Grail's presence. The whispers had turned to shouts in recent decades when ultrasound ground scans revealed the presence of an astonishing structure beneath the chapel, a massive subterranean chamber. Not only did this deep vault dwarf the chapel atop it, but it appeared to have no entrance or exit. Archaeologists petitioned to begin blasting through the bedrock to reach the mysterious chamber, but the Roslin Trust expressly forbade any excavation of the sacred site. Robert? Sophie was standing outside the car. Are you coming? She was holding the rosewood box which Captain Fash had returned to them. Inside, both cryptexes had been reassembled and nested as they had been found. The parchment verse was locked safely at its core, minus the shattered vial of vinegar.